Recovery Elevator, episode 475.
I've really come to a place where I'm totally okay with all the mistakes I've made. I'm totally a work in progress, and every day I'm getting a little better, chipping away at it, but I'm not putting pressure on myself that I've got to nail this. And that's my personality, is like, okay, all or nothing.
Welcome to the Recovery Elevator Podcast. My name is Paul Churchill, and I'm excited to be here with you today. Listeners, on today's episode, we have Sherry. She's 60 years old from Santa Barbara, California, and took her last drink on December 31st, 2022. Great job, Sherry. I want to say thank you to all of our Cafe RE chat hosts. You guys are the best. Listeners, today is going to be a good day. I can feel it. Now, next Monday on April 1st, registration opens for our 6th annual retreat in the beautiful Rocky Mountains located south of Bozeman, Montana. This retreat is from Wednesday, August 14th to Sunday, August 18th, and it's by far our most popular event, so mark your calendars, because last year this event sold out, I think, around 10 days. Now, we are going to spend a lot of time in nature, but did somebody say skee-ball and kickball tournament? So if you want to check out the full itinerary, get pricing information on cabins and camping spots, go to recoveryelevator.com/Bozeman or click the link in the show notes. Thank you, Robin. Now, it's been a long time since I've plugged our merch on the podcast. If you'd like to pick up a Recovery Elevator hat, sweatshirt, tank top, patch, or stickers, go to the link in the show notes or recoveryelevator.com/merch. And now a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp.
I recently had the opportunity to go to a chat by Liz Gilbert, who is the author of Eat, Pray, Love, and she talked a lot about boundaries and priorities. What would you do if you had extra time in your day? Where are your priorities and how are you protecting them? Therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/elevator today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/elevator.
Okay, let's get started. This is my first episode behind the mic after our fifth alcohol-free travel trip. So today I'm going to share a bit how the idea of sober travel emerged and then give a quick recap on the trip before we hear from Sherry. And side note, Sherry was on our recent trip. Sherry, it was great to meet you. Okay, how alcohol-free travel started. In spring of 2014, which should have been the trip of a lifetime, was an absolute soul-crushing experience that I barely survived. I started the trip as a chaperone for a group of high school students who did a unit on the Incas and then traveled to Peru to hike the Inca Trail. First off, I showed up drunk on the first day of that trip, but then I logged 10 days alcohol free. When the students left, my plan was to stay an additional 5 weeks in South America and be sober the whole time. I found myself drunk 4 hours after the students left. I then found myself on a string of day ones in Peru, Bolivia, Chile, and Argentina, trying my hardest to stay sober. I felt so alone, and I was so far away from home. On that trip, I was blacking out on buses and missing stops. This happened a couple times. I found myself driving drunk across much of the country of Argentina. I kept showing up at the wrong church for AA meetings. This trip was horrible. But at the end of that trip, the idea for alcohol-free travel was born because I said to myself, the only way I can do this again in the future is with other alcohol-free travelers. Now, side note, if you're wondering if you can still travel the globe and have fun without the booze, I've got good news for you. It's an unequivocal yes. Without a doubt, you can. In fact, it's even better. One big reason for that is no hangovers. You're not wasting a third or even a half of your trip. But you're going to want to surround yourself with other like-minded individuals. That last line is key. Okay, alcohol-free travel and recovery elevator. In 2018, we went to Peru. In 2020, went to Thailand and Cambodia. In 2022, 23, and 24, we did Costa Rica. So I want to give a shout out to our latest cohort of alcohol-free rock stars. We started the trip with 21 alcohol-free travelers and we ended with 12. I'm just kidding, guys. We started and ended with 21. Including staff, we started and ended with 24. And as far as I know, we were all 100% alcohol-free for the duration of the trip. How rad is that? So thank you everyone for showing up with an open mind, open heart, and saying yes. I want to give a shout out to the monkeys. We saw tons of them, and they always seem to be hanging out in the right trees at just the right time. Thank you, universe. Now, on the first morning of this trip, we traveled by bus, then in the back of a large truck, and then by foot with chair in tow to the most impressive tree in the area. This would be a ceiba tree that is at least 350 to 400 years old. Now, the ceiba is the spiritual tree for almost all indigenous tribes in Central and South America, including the Mayans, Aztecs, Incas, and almost all tribes of the Amazon basin. Now, in Western culture, we don't practice animism or worshiping trees as deities or gods, but I can tell you that we were all in awe while standing at the base of this almighty ceiba tree. Later that day, we began with our service project. We 100% made a positive impact on the environment and the sea creatures would be happy. We filled 18 large contractor-grade trash bags with garbage that would have ended up in the ocean once the rainy season begins in about 5 to 6 weeks. Now, there's a universal law that your outer world is a reflection of your inner world. As we clean up our inner world, the outside world has to respond. Internally, we are removing toxicity. This starts by no longer swallowing a toxic substance called alcohol. Externally, after some lag time, you'll see less toxicity. This is a universal law. It has to happen. Again, we filled 18 huge bags of trash that included so many plastic bottles, containers and jugs, one broken TV, and you guessed it, so many beer, wine, and liquor bottles. Now, I spoke with some locals and they were so appreciative of our efforts. After all, we cleaned up their river and beach. A highlight for me of the trip was we were lucky enough to witness a live sea turtle hatching. We visited a non-profit turtle sanctuary, but not every day the turtles hatch. We were given an empty coconut shell and they placed a baby turtle inside. Then we all released them together before they disappeared into the surf. A metaphor I want to pull from this is you quitting drinking is like the release of that sea turtle. Your new life awaits and anything is possible. Alcohol-free travel. Yes, we will be doing more trips in the future. Yes, in Costa Rica, and yes, to other parts of the globe. So be sure to sign up for our Recovery Elevator newsletter for upcoming events and trips. Last, I want to thank SoberLink and Athletic Greens for partnering with us on this event. And before we hear from Sherry, let's hear from Athletic Greens.
Taking care of our bodies is crucial in recovery. I've been drinking AG1 for almost a year, and it is now an essential part of my day. I usually wake up around 5, I do some journaling, my meditation, I drink my AG1, and then I know that I'm off to a good start. I focus on what I can control, and having this supplement is now a part of that. I have peace of mind knowing that one scoop a day has everything that I need, and it supports my immune system. I'm a mom. The kids get sick all the time. The weather's been crazy in San Diego, believe it or not. And it's just great to know that AG1 contains everything that I need. Not to mention, I have noticed an increase of energy throughout the day. So I love it. If there's one product I had to recommend to elevate your health, it's AG1. And that's why we've partnered with them for so long. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/recovery. That's drinkag1.com/recovery. Check it out.
Sherry, how are you?
I'm great.
All right. Fantastic to be here with you, Sherry. Let's get right into this. When was your last drink?
December 31st, 2022.
December 31st, 2022. Listeners, I got to know Sherry in our Dry January course in 2023. She went 31 straight days alcohol-free, kept that streak alive as we're currently, 14-something months around there as well. 13 and a half when this airs. It's going to be around 14 and some change. Phenomenal stuff. It's been fun to watch your progression. Sherry came and spoke to our Restore cohort just a couple weeks ago to let them know that, yes, it's possible. Keep it going. But before we get into your story with alcohol, Sherry, good listeners, a little background about yourself. Tell us maybe where you're from, your age, what you do for a living. Do you have a family? And then most importantly, Sherry, what do you like to do for fun?
Great. Well, I am 60 years old, just turned 60 in September. I live in Santa Barbara, California. I am married for 34 years. I have zero children, but I have lots of furry children. I have four cats. I'm a crazy animal lover. And I work in consumer packaged goods and operations. And for fun, I love everything outdoors. I love cycling. I love walking. I love hiking, you name it.
Gotcha. Before we hit record, Sherry's coming on our Costa Rica travel trip. And we were speaking a little bit about nature. And we're both putting the intention out there. Monkeys, we want a strong showing from the howler monkeys. So that's going to happen. Cool. Well, Sherry, let's do what we came here to do. I'm going to let you take it from where you want to start, your story with alcohol. Maybe when you took your first drink, when the problematic drinking occurred, did you ever try to moderate? Was it one and done on December 31st, 2022? Or did you try to quit many times before that? We're all ears. Let's do it.
Let's see. I'll try to do the Reader's Digest version because I am 60 and there's a lot of years from when I started. At 13, I had really, I would consider my first drink, which did result in a blackout and being extremely sick. I cruised through my teen years with drinking whenever I had the opportunity to drink, which was always problematic. I never eased into this. At 18, I got my first DUI. Did not deter me. I got my second DUI at 24. That one actually slowed me down a smidge because I was forced to go to AA meetings and take a year-long course in alcohol education. That would be the point in which I realized that I was an alcoholic, and I, like many people, had a stereotype of what alcoholism or alcoholic behavior looked like. And that was drinking daily. And I wasn't a daily drinker. So I didn't really understand that that was my problem. I knew that something was wrong. I did from my late teens, but I did not realize I had a condition called alcoholism. So that later turned into be a really big gift for me in life. I hated it. I didn't want to go, but I went and I found some very nice people there. So let's see.
You're talking about when at age 24, when you got your second DUI, that was the gift.
Yeah.
Which means, okay. As in you knew what AA was, you met some people who were on the path. Okay. Keep going.
Yep. Met some people that very small group, took me in, treated me, loving and, you know, didn't force anything upon me. So I knew these folks were there and that some of us had similar stories. So that was actually a gift I didn't know I was getting at the time. When I was in my probably about 29, I was then married and decided that alcohol was no longer serving me. I was still continuing to black out. I didn't still really know it was the first drink that was the one I shouldn't be drinking. I just couldn't stop drinking when I started. And so I decided I was going to give it a whirl at 29. I told my husband, and I, at the time, went to AA. That was really the options. And I made it 30 days. Then I drank again. I was very humiliated. But I did show up again on February 5th and stayed sober for about 8.5 years. I was really humiliated to have to be a newcomer each time. And I didn't want to go through that again. So I did stay sober. I did tap into a home group where I was comfortable and, you know, led some meetings, took on a commitment that really kept me sober. That first year was knowing I had to show up
What was that commitment like? Coffee, chairs, greeting?
No, I actually had to run the meeting. So I was secretary of the meeting. It was a weekday meeting at 2 o'clock. There weren't a lot of people who could take that meeting. And I had Friday afternoons off. I was young in sobriety. It was, you know, told to me not a great idea, but nobody was going to take it. So the meeting was going to shut down if I didn't take it. And I loved it. It was my home group. I didn't want to see that meeting shut down. So I took it. My sponsor was good with it. And I'm really grateful for that because it did 100% keep me sober. There were times that I was challenged or triggered and I wasn't going to drink because I knew I had to show up on Friday.
Sure.
And I didn't want to be that person.
Some good accountability.
Yeah, it was great accountability. And over the years, you know, I worked the steps. My sponsor was halfway, you know, very busy. I think I was grateful to a bizarre extent that she didn't have enough time for me because I didn't want to work as hard as I probably should have worked. And as time went on, probably after about 5 years of sobriety, I stopped really attending meetings. I'd go maybe once a month, maybe twice a month, slowly but surely stopped going and drank it during a stressful time in my life where I was traveling a lot for work, just needing to prove myself professionally, and caved and started drinking again.
Sherry, question. So it sounds like most of your 30s, you have eight and a half years alcohol free in most of your 30s. And at the end there, after 8.5 years, I was going to ask that question of what happened. No judgment. I had a long period of time in sobriety, went back out and drank. I understand it. But one commonality that I hear in the rooms, outside of the rooms, people who have a long-term range of sobriety, and then they go back and drinking. If I could summarize that with one phrase, it's people stop connecting with other people on this path, or they stopped, you know, deepening those bonds or investing in those friendships or those networks. Am I correct on that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Absolutely.
Cool.
I think you hit it. I didn't have to answer to anybody anymore because I kind of lost connection with everybody. So I was on my own again. And so I did start drinking, you know, maybe a glass of wine, maybe two glasses of wine. I told myself at this point that that it was hard liquor, that I couldn't drink hard liquor.
There we go. Yep, there's that inner rule.
That was the answer.
As long as I stick to wine and anything, yeah, we're fine.
Yep, we're good.
Yep.
And so I did that for quite a while, and I didn't get blackout drunk. I would get drunk, but I didn't get blackout drunk. And I did that for, honestly, I just got sober, right? So what is that? 20 years. I had various stages of abstinence during that time. I might go a year, I might go a month, I might go several weeks, but I didn't say I'm not going to drink. I just would not feel so great. So I'd stop for a bit.
Now, would you go back to AA for like a year of abstinence or was?
Yeah, there were definitely at least 3 or 4 times in there where I went back to AA. And this was interesting because I wasn't living in Santa Barbara, so I was living in a different town. And I found it was just different. It was a different meeting. It was a different kind of vibe. And it was good. It was good. It definitely helped me. But again, I didn't reach out. I didn't try very hard to make connections. Even though I knew that's what it was going to take. I just knew that it would get me on the road again and then I could do it. And so that would happen, you know, like I said, 3 or 4 times around the age of probably 45, 47. I knew that this had to stop at some point. I wasn't feeling well. I didn't look good. I wasn't happy. I was looking for something other than AA. I didn't know what that was. I couldn't find anything. I really can't. I don't have anything against AA. I think I just didn't get enough of the whys. For me, it had transferred into like, why am I doing this? Why does my behavior take me back? I called some places. I talked to some outpatient programs at that time, and I didn't stop, but I was curious. And again, I'd go into a period of where, oh, I didn't drink for 8 months or what have you. So I moved back to Santa Barbara when I was 50, 10 years ago. My parents were aging. my mother had just had a heart procedure, and my dad was not well. And this is where, I guess, my dad, I come from a family of alcoholism, and I watched my grandmother go down this path. I watched my dad go down this path, and it was sad. These were people I loved to death, and I watched them suffering with this horrible illness. My mom was in the hospital. My dad was at home. We got some help to look after him. He got so drunk that night, he got up and fell down in between the couch and the coffee table and couldn't get up. And the caretaker sent me a picture, and it was horrible.
Wow.
And she was just beside herself. And I just kept telling my husband, like, I don't want to be this person. And he's like, you're not that person. I'm like, but I will carry on just the path, and I will become that person. My dad drank his whole life, and he wasn't that person until he got into his late 40s and 50s. And to watch the progression was heartbreaking. And as I got closer, I guess, you know, and kept cruising through my 50s, still drinking. Oh, yes. And I do drink, and I did drink occasional hard liquor at this point in time. My key to moderation was to smoke some pot, and that could curb my alcohol, which was a really lousy process. But I guess I knew I needed accountability. I knew without a doubt that I needed to be accountable to some other people that understood this disease. I knew that I had to find a solution. I started reading Quit Lit. I read Holly Whitaker's Quit Like a Woman. That's where I understood about her group, Tempest. I joined that for a year, stayed sober for a month, but kept, you know, I had committed to a year. My money was spent. I kept listening. I read a lot. About spring of 2021, I started listening to RE. What truly resonated with me was I knew we couldn't do it alone, but I really understood for some reason that I needed community. Like, this was not ever going to get, this wasn't going to get under control until I really worked at connecting with people and had some accountability and gave it my all. And so I joined RE in the spring. I got an accountability partner. She and I were both still drinking. She stopped in July, continued to give me encouragement. And this is about 59. So I'm 59. I'm thinking to myself, this time is running out, Sherry. You need to figure this out. I want to turn 60 in a much better place than where I'm at today. And so I signed up for Restore, thinking, okay, maybe here's a place that I can meet some other folks in the community and hold myself accountable with this group of people. So I signed up joined on the 1st of 2023.
Quick question. You know, you mentioned as you first started at age 24, that was your second DUI, that AA, you know, that was the program. You got a sponsor and it worked for some time, 8.5 years or whatnot. And it served a purpose. You knew there was a community. And one thing you mentioned when you started talking about the why, it's like, you know, why am I drinking? Like, why am I like this? I'm not dogging AA. I just came from a meeting this morning in a small town called Paradise in Costa Rica in an old jail cell or an old jailhouse. Like, it's just remarkable where sobriety can take you. It was a great meeting, great group of people. But you know, they did the best they can. I'm talking Bill and Dr. Bob to building a program in 1935. They didn't know what we know now about trauma. And both Bill and Dr. Bob were highly traumatized people, Bill mostly in abandonment. But there's really not much of like the why there. And so, you know, part of my question is like, what is your why? You comment on that, you think. And then another question in there is like, how have you seen the recovery landscape changed since you first started at 24 and the amount of options we have now?
Yeah, boy, you know, my why is, I think, a number of things, but I did experience, you know, sadly, sexual abuse as a very young child. And I hid that and buried that for many, many, many years until my mid-20s, probably. And You know, I suffered from depression. I took antidepressants. I was always, before alcohol was available to me, you know, food was my drug. So I was always looking for something to soothe me, not belonging, feeling like I don't belong. And I do believe a lot of that is trauma related at this point. The recovery landscape, I think, is just amazing today. And really, even in the last, gosh, 5 to 10 years, like AA was the go-to. That was your solution. There were some others. I joined women, I think it's Women of Sobriety or Sobriety. Anyway, I joined some other groups along the way. But AA, you could always find almost anywhere in several meetings. So it was the go-to. Today, we have, gosh, we have so many options. Fit every personality style, right? There's groups online. There's tons of Zoom meetings. There's support. I go to therapy. I honestly didn't even think therapy was part of it when I was younger. I feel so much better because they're like, I realize now that everything I do almost is for my recovery, whether it's therapy, exercise, eating right, drinking more water, connecting with people, reading, like this all feeds my soul and keeps me grounded. And I think the other thing is just that it's all, I've really come to a place where I'm totally okay with all the mistakes I've made. I'm totally a work in progress, and every day I'm getting a little better, chipping away at it, but I'm not putting pressure on myself that I've got to nail this. And that's my personality, is like, okay, all or nothing. I'm all in, I'm doing it perfect, or I'm out. And so today I think, you know, if I want to turn on some meditation music and take 10 minutes, then I'm going to do that. And I can do that. And that's part of my recovery.
I want to comment on what you just said, is, and that's been a big one for me, is like, I have to nail this. I just recorded an episode yesterday called Progress, Not Perfection. And there's only one area in my life where I'm striving for perfection, and that's with alcohol. There's a lot on the line for that. But if, you know, that's basically when I started the self-help world, and there was this like inaccurate viewpoint where I could just start fixing like checkbox type stuff. Well, meditate. Well, go do breath work. Well, this. It was almost this siren song of, I'm going to fix myself until I'm perfect. And that's been a challenge. In like right around year five, I was like, wait a second. We're never supposed to reach the top of the mountain by design. You know, I like what you said right there. A, like, it made me shake my head going, yeah, preach on. I mean, how do you deal with like the perfection?
Yeah, I talk to myself a lot. It's a constant reminder. Professionally, like, I always feel like I got to over deliver. And so I carry that through my life. And, you know, I think again, back to my dad, like, he did everything 300%, whether it was cycling or whatever he was doing. I follow that very closely. And so I constantly have to take a deep breath and say, Sherry, you're going to get done what you're going to get done today. And what's the most important thing is that, you know, you don't drink today. That's really, at the end of the day, that's what I have to accomplish. That's what, like you said, that's what we have to succeed at.
One thing I like is how sobriety can simplify your life. If there's one thing I do today, that's it, is to not pick up that first drink. I like how you said it about 20 minutes ago, is you didn't realize it was the first drink that caused the problem, not drinks 2 through 50 for me, right? I like that. Yeah, sobriety can simplify a lot of things. And when I do my goal sheet at the end of the year, that's still the top. Just another year alcohol free, because if I don't do that, the whole cookie castle, whatever you want to call it, crumbles. Okay.
Yeah.
So let's talk about December 31st, 2022. Was that a rock bottom? Or I think you had the restore in mind going for dry January.
Yeah.
You know, what were you feeling in terms of fear? Were you like, you know, I've done this before, I've been in the same boat. How did you tell the voice, like, it's going to be different this time? What were you feeling?
Yeah, for sure. Like, definitely. My husband says I'm afraid of everything. There's probably some truth to that. And so, yeah, I was on just countless day ones. I think for listeners, that's one thing I want to say, is like, the last 5 years of my drinking, like I just couldn't get it together. Like day one, and it had never been that hard before. So I knew that whatever I was doing had to change. And so community, I just knew that had to be it. And I had been on chats with RE, so I knew, don't believe I had spoken, but I know I had attended. And so I loved what I heard, and I loved, you know, everybody's share. So I went into it with, you know, knowing it was going to be okay. Told myself I was going to put myself out there a little bit. I hate getting out of my comfort zone, but I went in just feeling like I'm really ready to sink my teeth into this and be part of the community. It didn't happen overnight though, right? Like we all have a hard time connecting. And again, like I want it to happen overnight. I want this to be immediate, and just have to keep at it. You have to keep showing up, and you have to keep an open mind. And so that's how I went in, you know, out of all those folks, I think, you know, I did connect with a few people. And I did find it easier after Restore was over. Like I did find myself on more chats. I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. I got to keep showing up. And I knew that about myself. I knew accountability was a really big deal. That first 30 days being part of that cohort kept me accountable. I knew I wasn't going to give up on this. I was going to show up every day. And the things I had heard previously going into this, I think, you know, don't quit quitting. Sounds so corny, but it will. Paul, I heard you say it so many times, like, just don't quit quitting, because everybody's time is when it's their time. I wish we knew when it was going to be our time, but it's just truly is a journey, as crazy as that sounds.
Now, Sherry, let me ask you about those day ones before. Right. We often, when we're in the middle of it, it can be the most painful thing ever. Hopelessness, you know, hello, adios, hope. And, you know, I remember my constant string of day ones that I was building so much resilience and fortitude. And I was like gathering all the parts of myself, is saying like, you know, fuck, dude, we got to do this. And I remember it switched. I stopped saying like, we're going to do this. It's like, we are doing it. Doesn't matter if I'm in the middle of 100 day one stretch in a row, like I'm doing this. You know, what did you learn about yourself in all those day ones?
Yeah. You know, I think I am persistent. I think persistence did pay off. I guess that's all I've got is just persistence. I want to say like everybody else, I think what I couldn't take anymore was the anxiety. Like I'm anxious anyway, but anxiety was off the charts. I was behaving in ways that was not good, was not professional at work. I couldn't believe that was me. And that was just riddled anxiety.
How is anxiety right now without the alcohol?
Much, much, much better. It's still there and probably always will be, but maybe it won't be someday. I don't know, but it's manageable. You know, now I really do practice the tools. I walk. I think I sit in it a lot. Like I guess I'm in therapy, so I go to my therapy sessions once a week. And I was sharing the other day that, like, I said, am I crazy? But I always ask why. Like I always want to know why. And so today I'm just super curious more. And even when I get in these really anxiety states, I'm like, hey, so why am I going through this? Like, what's going to happen? Guess what? Nothing terrible really does ever happen. So now I just kind of sit through it, and I sleep, and I sleep great, and I wake up and I'm ready to go again.
You know, sitting through it, right? And I struggled so bad with anxiety when alcohol was in my life. I still have it today, right? But it's like 90, it's probably 85% better. And the rest of it's like normal anxiety. But after, you know, so many countless remedies, where I'm at right now too, is just sit through it and like, you know, be there with the inner child. I try to relax the parts of my body. Like it's usually the solar plexus or the stomach area right around the navel, like the shame center, what's up, you know, second chakra, all that stuff. And I try to relax and breathe into it. And then, like you said, like nothing comes out of it. And I've also tried to figure out the why, like, incessantly. But some of the stuff that I've learned with quantum science about interconnectedness, and as I become more aware of my own body, I recognize that my anxiety spikes. For example, like if I'm flying back into America, when I leave Costa Rica, like once that airplane starts to dip down into Denver, Colorado, or anywhere, like my body, my nervous system starts to pick up on the energy of the different places and people and things. And so what I'm saying is, like, sometimes I've realized my anxiety isn't even mine. There's a lot of fires in this world, both metaphorically and real. Like, it seems there's the world's on fire in some places, and I can pick up on that stuff, even if it's on the other side of the globe. And that's part of my superpower, being an empath, right? It's quite painful at times, but sometimes it's like this endless search of the why. I tell myself, you know, like, it's good to know. And sometimes it just doesn't mean shit. And sometimes, like, this why isn't even my why. Like, I'm still struggling from, like, the family generational stuff within my own family, that trauma. Like, the why isn't even my why. So at the end of the day, I still have to just sit with it and be with it and comfort that little kiddo inside. I liked how you said that, Sherry. So, like, halfway in this last year, alcohol free, like, you've been here before 8.5 years in your 30s. You know, does it feel different this time? Do you see that 8.5 year mark as, like, your goal, your goalposts, or is it more like one day at a time type stuff?
Yeah, I in no way see 8 years or more as my goal. I, you know, some of it, I hate to say, but I think some of it is just age, but very different. It's very, very different this time in terms of letting things get to me, like whether that is work or toxic people or what the weather is today. Like, I don't roll with it naturally, but I roll with it. I'm just like, all right, well, that's out of my control. You know, today it's pouring rain. I can't go out for a bike ride. What else can I do to make myself feel good today or nurture myself or be productive? And there is, for me today, there is no goal. Like, I mean, the goal is to not drink today. That's it. I love when I listen, when I listen to you on RE or other podcasts, it's like, you know, it's so true. All we have is today. Like, that's it. I've lost loved ones. I have, you know, I still am going through some tough times with family in terms of health issues. And, you know, what I close every single day with is, you know, a gratitude prayer. It's like, we made it through today. That was a good day. Maybe we had some hiccups, you know, God willing, we got tomorrow when I wake up, but that's all we got. And it's a good day if we didn't pick up a drink today. So yeah, I don't get too far ahead of myself. Yeah, it was a year kind of a exciting point. Yeah, I wanted to get that again. I really did. But it's, you know, it's just like you said, stacking days. That's what we're here to do. Another day of alcohol-free sobriety. That's what it's about.
Sherry, I think when a lot of us first quit drinking, we're upset. Upset at the world, the situation, maybe the toxicity of culture, whatnot. We're upset. But what I learned is by keep showing up in the rooms is eventually that transitions into a state of gratitude. I did an episode a long time ago of The Grateful Alcoholic. The first time I heard somebody say in a meeting, I'm a grateful alcoholic. It's like, hang on, everybody. I got this. I'm going to just walk over there and ninja slap this person and come back and sit down. Meeting can now resume. But I think the purpose of an addiction, Sherry, is one of those things that's so beautiful, is it puts us in a state of gratitude if we roll with it long enough, not the addiction, the sobriety component or the alcohol-free component, because it simplifies things. Just like you said, you know, we have these big plans or whatnot, but at the end of the day, if that's it, we check off just a couple big things, then that's the win. Now, I've asked this question, where do you see yourself in 5 years, for like the last 30 years of my life? I don't know why. That's just the question I always ask people. And one thing that I've learned is the people in the Western world, mostly Americans, they have it all figured out. Like year three, year five, and then here's my year 10 and 15. Down here in Latin America, they don't know the answer. It's like a stump. Huh, you know, I've never thought about that. It's like, are you serious? You never thought about that? And I've had the opportunity to volunteer in some pretty rural, poor places in the world. And you ask that question and it's even a further off thing. But the flip side of it is, like, the less you don't know where you're going to be tomorrow, the happier you are, because you're more in this day. I've got some, we're building a small project here in Costa Rica, and I've got some workers from Nicaragua who are like trying to figure it out, right? They're crossing the border to Costa Rica because the, you know, their end goal is to go to America, but they're here in Costa Rica because the wages are higher. And I asked that question. I'm like, hey, where do you guys see yourself in a bit? And like, no one can answer it. And they're like, well, I'm just making sure I got food on the table for today. Then I ask another question, are you guys happy? And the answer is always, oh yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And that's what I've realized so quickly when doing this volunteer work or like doing this type of traveling and asking these types of questions is that, you know, happiness A is not a 5-year destination or even further. Like it can only be in the day. And a lot of us in America, we think we are on the happiness train, but when I come down here or in other places, and this has been Peru, this has been in Asia, this has been Central America. It's like, wow, we have so much to learn from these people who are more rooted and grounded in the day. Talk to us about presence, Cherie, like being present and the power of now.
Yeah, I love that because I think it is, it's a challenge to stay in the now, especially after years of projecting and you know, having all these goals is where I want to be, is where I want to be. But I think I do a pretty decent job now staying, you know, really living in the now. Things are good. I have a good job. I have a wonderful husband. I have my furry friends here that live with me. You know, I pretty much do what Cherie wants to do. Yeah. And I really do try to not get ahead of myself. But boy, it's been, you know, that's work. It's work to stay there. But yeah, things are really, I feel like I'm good. I'm not so far from perfect, but it's, you know, like I said, I'm a work in progress. As long as I'm making progress, I'm good.
There we go. Cherie, you got another question before we hit the rapid fire round. You know, we've all heard the opposite addiction is connection, track with it. You were earlier talking about community, but talk to us. I think you said 4 cats. And was there another animal as well?
Not just the cats.
Just the cats. Like how?
Just cats. I'd love some more animals, but my husband is kind of likes to keep me under control in that regard.
And what I'm getting at is like, how can these cats or how can animals or other, you know, living beings with heartbeats fulfill that internal need that human beings have to connect?
Oh my gosh. I just couldn't do, I can't imagine life without animals. I didn't ever have children, so maybe there's something in there, but all animals, like I am that person that I know I should be better, but I'll see a dog on the street and I'm that crazy lady that walks across the street to see the dog and hopefully it's a friendly dog. But they just nurture you. I mean, the love and the, oh gosh, that they give you. My mom's 83. She's got a dog and a cat. Like I think she'd be living with me if she didn't have those two little creatures. I mean, not that that's a bad thing, but they fulfill your heart. Oh, I just, cats, animals and music, right? Those two things are like big in my sobriety world.
Yeah, we have a language. We're speaking English right now, but really no language is needed to connect with an animal or a pet. As I mentioned, I was in a small AA meeting this morning, about 6 people. It's in a jail, an old jailhouse, doors are open. And halfway through, a dog walks in, just sat right in front of me, has no collar, like it's a street dog, right? And just sat with me for 10, 15 minutes. I was rubbing his ears. I was pulling off, you know, like fleas and stuff. And but just such a beautiful moment with the dog. And it filled me up without a doubt.
It really takes you can just feel the stress kind of flow out of you as you're petting an animal. I mean, it's just amazing.
There is a law, I think it's not entropy, but it's on the tip of my tongue. Anyways, our nervous systems will attune itself to the most stable nervous system in a room. Yeah, like you can get even metronomes in a room together and we'll all find one homeostasis. So absolutely, animals help us in so many ways that we don't even know. Like therapy dogs is an absolute real thing. You can be, your energy can be frenzied and your nervous system will attach itself to your golden retriever's nervous system in theory. And I think it absolutely works too.
Oh, absolutely. I believe that.
Cherie, we have reached the rapid fire round.
All right.
Questions within 10 to 15 seconds. That would be great. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All righty. What's the one thing you've learned about yourself since quitting drinking?
That I do have some patience.
All right. I love it. What's your best sober moment?
Oh, this one's so easy. It was Bozeman this last year in the breath work session.
Oh, yeah.
Never experienced something so amazing in my life.
Crazy stuff. What's your favorite alcohol-free drink?
I am a big coffee drinker, and then I love the hop water peach flavor.
What's the point of life?
To be there, I'm going to say to love and be supportive of each other.
If you did have a fifth cat, what would its name be?
Samantha.
All right. Favorite type of pizza?
Oh, I'm so boring. Sausage and cheese.
Last question. What parting piece of guidance can you give the listeners?
You know, it sounds pretty cliche, but never quit quitting. And you don't have to do it alone. Just don't do it alone.
And Sherry, give us your own customized. You might need to ditch the booze if line.
You might need to ditch the booze if you make your travel plans based on if the destination serves alcohol on Sundays.
That checks out. For sure. Sherry, thank you so much for joining us on the episode. Thanks for sharing your story with our Restore cohort this last year. Thanks for being part of Cafe RE and in my alcohol-free journey as well.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Someone on this latest alcohol-free trip mentioned they were considering exiting planet Earth about a year ago, but they instead chose life. They quit drinking about 358 days ago, started doing the inner work, and their presence, their energy, made our recent trip so much better. So I'm so thankful this person is still with us on the planet. So thankful. Now, song and vibration is a part of all of our events. I taught almost like a Wheels on a Bus song about the trees to help us learn the names of the local trees. And the last line of the song was about a ceiba. And here is the last line. I see you, ceiba. I see you, ceiba. Almighty ceiba. I see you, ceiba. Recovery Elevator, go big, because eventually we all go home. I love you guys.